Great question. The Manufacturing Podcast offers news and information for the people who make, store, and move things, and those who manage and maintain the facilities where that work gets done. Hi, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Great Question, a Manufacturing Podcast, brought to you by Endeavor Business Media's Manufacturing Group. I'm Tom Wilk, the Chief Editor of Plant Services, and with us today is Lisa Brownlee, who is the owner and founder at Leaders Imago, which focuses on transformation, growth, development, and improvement, whether for an individual or an organization. And the great question that we're going to tackle today is, when exactly did soft skills become hard skills, especially for the average industrial worker? I'll say a few things about Lisa before we start the conversation. She holds both BS and MS degrees in chemical engineering. She worked for 11 years for a major engineering and manufacturing company in Columbia, South Carolina, and is also a Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belt. Her experience spans operations, continuous improvement, training development and delivery, and product assurance. And Lisa and I met earlier this March at MarCon 2024 on a panel to support the Unturning Steel program. It's a program that supports veterans as they transition from active service into the private sector. She also gave a single presenter session presentation at the conference on soft skills and hard skills. I'm so pleased, Lisa, that you were able to join us today to talk more about that topic.
It is my pleasure to be here, Tom.
Well, after that long introduction, tell us a little bit more about yourself, how you got into this specific line of business, maybe some things you're working on right now.
Yeah, so what a long, strange trip it has been. When I tell people I'm a chemical engineer turned leadership development consultant, they're like, how's that go? So I grew up in manufacturing and had a great experience as a process engineer. I loved working on the shop floor and learned so much from the operators. They took good care of me, and it was a great place to learn, a good proving ground. And the company I worked for, I was really, really fortunate to have a company that invested so much in my growth. And so you described a lot of different experiences that I had over the years in manufacturing for this company. And my last job as a product assurance manager, I had a very large team, about 80 people under my umbrella, 24/7 operations, a lot of crisis management. And I admire the people who are good at crisis management because that is not my bag. And I started asking myself, what do I really want to be when I grow up? And I thought back to, where am I passionate? What am I good at? What do I enjoy? And it was really back to the improvement and the training and coaching that I did during one portion of my career. And I thought, I think I've got something to offer here. And so in 2013, Leaders Imago was born with the goal of helping leaders transform, emerge, and spread their wings. And I had some really great mentorship as I got started and acquired the Team Manager Development Center, which we'll be talking about at some point in this conversation, I'm sure, and have just built my business from there. And I have some longtime clients that I've gotten to work with for many years on leadership development, helping them identify what competencies make sense for their culture and building training and delivering that, you know, around what that model looks like for them. I've also got a couple of more process improvement type projects that are tapping into my Lean Six Sigma skills and change management skills, trying to keep those sharp.
You know, Lisa, what strikes me about your experience is that the wide range of experiences you were able to develop on the job has led you to a career where you help enable that growth in others, that you give them the confidence to try different things on the manufacturing floor. Tell us about the industry and the people that you work with. Are people like their stereotypes that we hear in manufacturing, sort of rough edges and all?
That's a funny question. And the answer is yes and no. I find that we are all a product of our cultures and what is modeled for us. And The rough edges and all, and I think rough edges and all doesn't necessarily apply just to the manufacturing industry. I've seen some rough edges in all walks of life, and the no part is that there's more to us than meets the eye. I mean, we all have biases because we are human beings, and I find myself challenged by people who surprise me, and I love that, and it prompts me to give people a bigger benefit of the doubt and to say, you know what, we are each more capable than what we are revealing to others, and if only I as the individual can become aware of that, that my impact is not having the effect that I intended, or if somebody else can hold the mirror up to me and be able to express that in a way that I can hear it, then we've cracked open the door for someone to struggle through their cocoon moment of the imago process in order to emerge having new skills, having a new attitude, having new understanding, new self-awareness. And I think that is what is exciting about, you know, being in the manufacturing industry in particular. Manufacturing has traditionally been this like command and control approach, top down. And I think that in the last couple of decades, all the research on employee engagement that has come out to say we need to have empowered employees who will own their work as if they owned the business. Like, if that's what we're really after, we need a different leadership and management approach. Mm-hmm. And trying to create a space for especially frontline supervisors who do what they are, what was modeled for them in a lot of cases, to give them kind of that mirror and say, all right, what do you see? What's working? What's not working? Here are some other ways to try it. What's going to fit for you so that you can still be your authentic self?
I think it's interesting that we see a newer generation of leaders also moving into manufacturing, both at the Marcon conference and at this week's Fluke Accelerate conference. I observed a lot more millennial leadership on the maintenance plant floor than I have before. And it with these new leaders is going to come new backgrounds, which inform how they approach people. These new leaders are coming on board and they're a little bit less beholden to the old ways of doing things simply because they have different expectations on how their careers are going to go. One stat that I thought was fascinating was that, you know, the average Gen X worker or boomer worker changes jobs 3 times in 40 years. The average millennial worker will change jobs 11 times in 8 years. Mm-hmm. And so the expectation for themselves is to keep learning and growing and moving. And so that will, of course, have a different impact on how they manage their teams.
Definitely. And, you know, traditionally, frontline supervisors are the people who performed really well in their doer role, like whether they were an operator or they're a welder or an electrician or, you know, and somebody said, hey, that guy's doing so good, I'm going to make him the manager of the rest of the people, whether they had leadership skills or not. And I find that our frontline supervisors are also the ones who might not get the good training opportunities to develop their leadership and management skills, nor do they get the high quality feedback and coaching that helps them recalibrate or reshape. So it's sort of like they've either got it or they don't. And and to your point, like we've got all these newer generations coming into the workforce. What an exciting time to be in my shoes and seeing how does their experience and technology lend itself to what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think we're going to have to keep an eye on is, you know, the soft skills. These are the interpersonal skills, which frankly are the hard ones to do, right? Because mm-hmm. when I'm hammering a nail or welding something, I'm getting immediate feedback about my results. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I'm talking to you, I know what I'm intending, but I may not see the results of that immediately, or I may have ticked you off because of the way I came across, and I might not know that you're stewing over that, right? And so the soft skills, communication, delegation, priority setting, they don't always unfold the outcomes quickly. They really are hard skills.
It can take a lot of experience just to read someone else, like you're talking about, where, as you said, the immediate feedback when you measure the health of a machine or even pound a nail in, you do get immediate mechanical feedback. The social feedback loop is a lot more difficult for people. I think we've all seen people who struggle in these kind of situations. I think that's part of why I was excited to speak with you today, is because you have an approach and a system to help other people understand what is the level of skill they've got at reading a social situation. How does their on-the-job decision-making processes impact their success or failure on the job? And that goes back to the Team Manager Development Center in large part, correct?
Yes, my baby. Well, it was my mentor, Ellen Clausen Davis, had her consulting business, a very successful business, EC Davis and Associates. She is the brilliant mind who envisioned the Team Manager Development Center. And what prompted her was her realization that those frontline supervisors, mid-level managers, are the ones who are often thrown into the deep end of the pool, sink or swim. And she said, how can we create a space where a supervisor, a team manager, could come, show what they know how to do, get really high quality feedback and coaching, have a chance to self-reflect, right? And marrying all of that together, giving them an opportunity to practice things in some different ways, all of which giving them a chance to stretch outside of their comfort zone and practice things in a new way and see how that changes the outcomes. And so she and her team did a huge deep dive assessing what does this level of management do on a day-to-day basis? What makes them most successful? What are those competencies that they need to be able to master? And what sort of simulation could we build that would feel like real life and give them a chance to practice this in a real life manufacturing kind of setting? And the Team Manager Development Center was born.
The simulation part of that really caught my attention when we were working together on the Unturning Steel panel. Tell us more about how the process goes. It's one day simulation, one day follow up, or combination of that?
It's actually a 2.5 day program. Mm-hmm. On the first day, participants come in and they just get indoctrinated into what we call Hannibal Placemats Factory. And it's based off of a real life process, not making placemats per se, but participants are managing a team, and the facilitators actually get to play the role of one of their direct reports. And so I, as the facilitator, get to interact with each of my participants in one-on-one interactions, and I get to see firsthand, how do they set expectations for me? How do they hold me accountable? How do they involve me in making decisions? Or do they just, fix everything themselves? Are they delegating? How do they run a meeting? How do they do some of the more nuanced things like empathize? And how flexible and adaptable are they? So we are looking at 12 different competencies throughout this simulated day, this first day, in order to get a first baseline assessment of what they're capable of. How do they show up? And some people are like, well, can't you fake it? Can't someone come and fake it? And the way this is designed, yeah, you can fake it for a little while, but you're going to get tired of faking it. Mm-hmm. And what we hear from the people's managers who attend is, wow, you really nailed him. I mean, in terms of correctly identifying where the strengths are and where the development needs are. But after that first day, we reveal the cards and share what we've been looking for. And the participants begin to reflect on, where did I do that today in this simulated factory? Mm-hmm. And what did I feel like I did well and where did I struggle? So they're doing a little self-reflection and homework overnight. We're mm-hmm. also doing some homework, putting together our feedback, because the next morning they get some coaching. And then the second day is the next day at work. But the second day provides them opportunities for more real-time feedback and coaching on the areas where they have identified they want to work. And they are stretching outside of their comfort zone and trying things and seeing how far can I swing this pendulum on this behavior to where it has the effect, or do I take it over the top, right? And so they're constantly thinking about, how do I do this? Mm-hmm. What is my intent? What are my options? And the coaches are there to help them think through, all right, how did that go? What went well? What was your intent? Is there a different way that you could do that? What are your options here? Mm-hmm. And let's explore one of those. Let's try that again. And through that support and coaching, folks get to really explore and practice some things in new ways and just try on new behaviors to see what feels good, what gets me the outcome that I ultimately want. How does this look at work? And that's the coach's job at the end. On the last half day, it's one-on-one coaching. Folks who come through this program probably don't get this level of high-quality coaching and attention that they get at the Team Manager Development Center. But it's about translating what did they learn back to work, because that's where the rubber meets the road.
Right. And I think one of the beautiful things about the program is that it takes what people, I think, often consider a very unstructured environment, social skills, soft skills, communication skills, leadership skills. And it reinforces through the act of immersion and then feedback, the notion that actually you can apply a process to what seems unstructured and generate improvements. I mean, for the engineering mindset, that I think that's really key. People look for that problem solution format, and the degree to which folks who do need a little bit of leadership coaching or even soft skill coaching can understand, wait a second, yeah, soft skills really aren't that soft. There is a certain hard process I can follow to improve and then see positive results in the job.
Yes. Yes. And I think that what the coaches are able to offer are some tips or tricks on things like, to make it more process oriented, because when we're operating out of our most natural instincts, right, that's in some cases just fine to engage in a particular situation in your most natural state. And then other times we really do need people to take a beat and try a different approach. So it's like, what will trigger you in the real world to remember to ask an open-ended question or to not to interrupt, or to step out of your comfort zone and speak up in a meeting when you normally are the wallflower, because you have something important to offer. But, you know, and some of it is helping people recognize what their internal barriers are. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot there. It's deep.
It is deep. You're making me reflect, of course, on some of my own experience. I grew up in a very conflict-averse household. And that will not get you very far in the business world if you don't understand how to raise issues with people and work out conflicts, because those inevitably arise.
That's right.
So I can only imagine the other experiences that engineers bring. Quick story. My first formal job was a teacher at Ohio State University, and I taught the writing electives for engineers. And you know, the standard stereotype of engineers is don't know how to communicate. They don't communicate well. They don't write very well. Well, of course, during the process of teaching these writing classes, I found the reverse to be true, as long as there was, number one, trust built up between the students and the teacher, and number two, open-ended questions. And you may have had to ask maybe one or two more open-ended questions than usual, but these were people who are used to giving very direct answers two questions. They had the knowledge. They had thoughts about what they were experiencing. Just the confidence that someone wanted to hear more of what they had to offer and then see them translate that onto, at the time, pen and paper. Now it's keyboard. It was a brilliant experience. At the end of the class, one of the exam questions I asked was based on, we had read Shakespeare's The Tempest, and I said, okay, you're engineers. Design a flag for the nation that the sailors find themselves shipwrecked on, and explain your reasoning, 1, 2, 3. And it was a chance to exercise the creative muscles and also the analytical muscles. And it was wonderful to see the output that the students would provide once they believed they would be listened to.
Yes, yes.
And believed that what they had to say was going to matter in this classroom. You know,
yes.
It wasn't an engineering class. It wasn't mechanics. It wasn't thermodynamics. It was a writing class. So as long as they understood what they were working on and what they were learning, they achieved. It was fantastic.
Well, and you said the word trust in there. And I think that's one of the important aspects of the Team Manager Development Center. Mm-hmm. These coaches have to quickly build a relationship with each of their participants in order to create the space for there to be some trust so that the participants can be a little bit vulnerable. It is uncomfortable to try things differently. When mm-hmm. I was a new manager, my company actually sent me through the Team Manager Development Center. And so I think that's when I fell in love with it, because when I left there, I had watched myself on video as part of the program and done a lot of reflection and gotten a lot of coaching and feedback. And I knew exactly what I needed to do mm-hmm. to be more effective when I got back to work. And I knew how. In theory, I knew how, and I had gotten to practice it in the program itself. And it was awkward, right? Trying things new and stretching out of my comfort zone. And it did feel sort of temporarily vulnerable. And then going back and trying to apply it in real life also felt a little temporarily vulnerable. But that's where we start building these muscles, is through practice. I mean, it's just right. Like weightlifting of any kind. And I think that having the support and encouragement of my coach during the TMDC and of my manager when I got back to work, knowing what I was working on is what helped me lean in to that vulnerability. And it required that trust, which I think is so critical for development.
I think that takes us back to one of the first questions we talked about, which is a sort of rough exterior of the average manufacturing worker, how that's a stereotype. And I do think there is a certain truth in that these environments have been traditionally masculine, maybe a little bit less openly vulnerable. But my experience working in the sector for the past 10 years has been that male or female, once you do make that connection, the vulnerability happens and then real change occurs.
Yes. Almost everybody who comes through the program says that, number one, felt just like work. That was one of the best training programs or learning experiences I've ever been through. And some of them even say something like, I wish there was another day. And I think that the I wish it was another had another day is coming from, I was really working hard, but I was making progress and I was getting a lot of feedback about how I was doing. People are hungry for that feedback. And I think that our newer generations coming into the workforce are expecting that. And we need to equip our supervisors and managers who are millennials and Gen Xers and how to do that well.
I certainly hope the more millennials and Gen X and Gen Z take the reins at HR, especially too in leadership, that they do set aside some of the budget for training. I'm hopeful. Well, and you likened it also to adding and growing new muscle mass over time. You know, you don't gain 30 pounds of muscle during your first workout. What you do is you go back over and over, add a little bit more weight to the bars. Maybe run a little farther if you're a long distance runner, and before you know it, you're going to run 26 miles. You're going to bench your own weight. But it doesn't happen the first time, does it?
No, no. And it requires tearing of the muscle to grow the muscle.
Hmm.
So right. There's pain. There's pain in growth.
No, I hear you. That a buddy of mine who was a runner who was an inspiration to me said that you have to fall in love with the pain a little bit and just accept that it's going to lead to better things.
That's right.
So, all right. Well, I do have a more question for you. You posted a blog post on your professional blog this week, which showcased your past playing team basketball. There's a great picture of you taking a fadeaway jumper. So, since we're in the second full weekend of March Madness and we got to fall in love with the paint a little bit, let's talk about brackets. How are your brackets doing?
My men's bracket is completely busted. I had Arizona going all the way, and
Oh.
they have sadly lost to my rival, Clemson, of all teams. But I'm not a hater, so I guess I'll be pulling for Clemson through the end, even though my bracket has been busted. I am pulling for the USC Gamecocks women to go all the way, and they are in it to win it. It'll be an exciting end to this championship.
I agree. On the men's side, I had a heart attack moment last night when Illinois pulled out a 3-point win against Iowa State. It was the nation's number one men's offense versus the number one men's defense. And so we found it, in this case, it came out in favor of the offensive team, Illinois. The women's brackets, I think we're at the most interesting part. You know, the seeds normally went up to the Sweet 16, and now it's anyone's ball game. I'm excited to watch the rest of the women's bracket.
It will not disappoint in terms of excitement and anticipation. And I'm already looking at my fingernails thinking, ugh, which one, what do I have left? Because it's going to be a nail biter.
I'll be honest, I'm pulling for Iowa just to for Caitlin Clark to cap her dream season off, but
Phenom.
but I'll if they can't go all the way, I'll be pulling for USC for you.
Thanks. Go Cocks.
Well, once again, everyone, this has been Lisa Brownlee, and she is the owner and founder of Leaders Imago. And she was here talking with us about when did soft skills become hard skills. And again, I think what we've talked about today, Lisa, is that they've always been hard skills. It just takes good coaching and good application of leadership principles to sort of bring that out of people.
Right on.
Okay.
I've enjoyed this so much. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being here, and I look forward to the next time we talk.
Right on. Thanks, Tom.